Most of them just require dollar, you know.
Welcome, I'm gonna call the tax committee to order, and members, I appreciate you waiting, we're waiting for quorum. We're gonna start with Representative Ruth Bell, because she's been waiting patiently. So if Representative Ruth wants to join us, and we do now have a quorum, members, the reason I waited to start is because we didn't have a quorum, and we've been having this problem where folks attend to their business and then come in. If people could come in and check in first, so we can start our business and then go do what you need to do, because what happens is the authors wait in the audience as we wait for quorum. So, I know people feel like they gotta get dinner in before we're back on the floor, but we do wanna, I just noticed of late when I've asked authors that, when I pulled authors, that what we're gonna do is move their bill when we have a quorum and lay it over, that they often don't wanna leave the room hearing that, because they don't know that that's actually gonna happen. And they're smart to think that. They're smart to be worried that folks might forget that after we heard Representative Ruth's bill that we were actually going to formally move it and lay it over. So that's why I decided to wait today. So another preliminary comment is just that the tax committee work now, everybody knows we've had it pretty easy this year. We did the federal conformity bill, and actually we're one of the few bills that got signed around here, so we can all feel good about that. But now we're going to start the 2008 omnibus tax bill process. And so for the month of April, if you've been looking on your calendar, we're meeting 4 days a week for at least 3 hours a day. So people should know who've served in the tax committee before that now we're going to really start working, and we need to hear members' bills so we can determine what should be in the omnibus tax bill. So with that, thank you, Representative Ruth, for your patience. And with Representative Lanning.
I'll move House File 3126.
Thank you, Representative Lanning, House File 3156. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
26, I apologize. 3126.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a question, first of all, for clarification. Are you looking to roll this in then as possible into the omnibus bill, or to send it to the floor?
We've never sent one to the floor yet. You might be able to, if you're just a fee, and I guess I haven't looked at your bill yet, it's possible. But if you're a straight up tax bill, everything gets laid over for possible inclusion. We won't take a vote. We'll just consider it.
Okay, we'll explain it, and you can go from here.
Okay.
Number one, there is no change in the tax. So I'll just get that up front, because this is a tax committee. And what it does, this proposal would condense the current three intercity bus license plate classifications into one classification. The three classifications are currently over population, over 200,000, between 70,000 and 200,000, and under 70,000. It also applies to private bus companies, and there's only one private bus company, and that's Rochester, who is currently in the 70,000 less than 70,000 range, and actually would have to be changed because now they're more in the population than 70,000. So it would be putting them into one, and it would also then free up two program classifications that could be used for other categories. So it's just do some house cleaning, and as I said earlier, the tax stays the same. There's no change. And if you have any other questions, Ms. McCormick is here to give you more detail.
Okay, thank you. Welcome. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, Pat McCormick, Director of Driver and Vehicle Services. And we are just hoping to free up two categories for in case we need those for registration tax classifications, as well as just be more efficient in terms of just no longer doing it according to population, as Representative Ruth stated, so we'd appreciate your support. Okay, thank you. Other questions for either Representative Ruth or Ms. McCormick? Representative Weedling.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Ruth and Ms. McCormick. I guess I almost don't know what to ask. I might be the only one here, but I don't understand what you're trying to do here. Could you try a little bit more to explain it?
Representative Ruth.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. I'll refer to Ms. McCormick.
Madam Chair and Representative, what we're trying to do is that we have classifications of vehicles, and because we're plating those vehicles, and so it's a registration tax, and we require that right now Rochester is required $2 per bus to have the classification and the plate on the bus, and so that's what we're trying to do is eliminate two plate categories because we have no buses in those classifications. And in that respect, then if we have other plate categories,
that would be introduced by the legislature and then enacted into law, we would free up those classifications. This is the only private carrier bus system that operates within the city of Rochester, and that's the only intra-city bus line that is operating at this time. So we think that as a result, we should eliminate the fact that right now we have three and they're based on population in terms of how we classify them. And then that provides us with the plate category, and then those buses are plated in that fashion so that they are recognized for law enforcement purposes and for vehicle safety inspection purposes. That's why we do that. And then there's a tax charge for each of those vehicles.
Representative Wheeling? Representative Wheeling, trying to figure it out myself. It seems that it's trying to just make it a straight user fee across the state as opposed to a population-based system. Is the bill revenue neutral, do you know? So it's not going to bring a new dollar in or give a tax cut either to the buses?
Madam
Nobody's
Chair,
benefiting?
Madam Chair, it's revenue neutral.
Okay. Representative Wheeling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm getting to understand it a little bit better, but I guess what I don't understand, I didn't know anything about these different categories, and I guess I'd like to understand a little bit about, like, why were they there in the first place? And a part of your explanation that I don't get is when you talk about opening up these other two categories, I mean, it's not as though this is a limited resource, is it? I mean, it's not like the airwaves with an actual physical thing, and, you know, you got to have this bandwidth for somebody. I mean, these are artificially constructed categories, right? So I don't understand why you need to open up two of them. But maybe this isn't all important to what you're trying to do, but I'm just trying to understand what we're doing here.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative, it may seem like that to you, but with our current mainframe information system that we have, anytime we do not have space on this information system or the ability to add new plate classifications at this time, and so for us it is an issue of sustainability and efficiency. As you know or may not know, we are requesting funding this year for a new information system that would take 4 years to build, and so it is important to us to free up those categories. For instance, if there was a new contribution plate classification, that might be an example, or we had a new classification for one-ton trucks or something to that effect, we would need a plate classification for specific types of vehicles. So that's what this is doing. It's freeing it up. It's being more efficient. And it also, I think, takes into account the fact that we may not need classifications for specific classifications just based on the population.
And we have Marquardt Coles Landing, but I do want to just go back for a minute, Representative Bruce. The staff says the Dossley is not revenue neutral, and lest anybody think that we're not watching people's tax dollars in Minnesota, the bill loses $552. and that's calculated off, if you look at the revenue estimate number, 69 buses do such and such, and this many buses do that. And you go to two bucks, and as you calculate them all, it actually loses money. So I think the tax isn't set high enough. Representative Coles,
to that point, I think, you know, again, I'm a guy who thinks that language matters. I see this as saving the taxpayers of Rochester, the people of Rochester, the bus riders in Rochester, the $550, not losing $550. Language matters.
Thank you for that, Representative Coles. I mean, I guess the confusing part is if you look at the revenue estimate, and for Ms. McCormick and Representative Ruth, that's what we look at here is the revenue estimate. So there's currently one taxpayer affected by this bill. And so I was asking, is there really just one company in the whole state of Minnesota that does this? And the answer that we know of was yes. And so it appears to me that, you know, the bill would either save this company $552 if we change the tax, would cost them something. I mean, it seems that it's still all netting out in the same company, so honestly, what does it matter? I'm kind of confused by all that, and you could think about that We'll let Representative Marquardt close and Lanning ask their questions. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And that was exactly the point. I had calculated that if they would fit under the 70,000 to 200,000 population, which was $10 a shot. So it's going down to two. So I'll go to my next one. $2. I mean, what? I mean, we don't want them to say to go in the hole on this. I don't know what you can do for $2. I mean, I don't know what the price might be, but $2 per, you know, may cost more to do that. I mean, it just.
I did this correctly, and we have members that are concerned about the cost of taxes, and we want to raise the tax on these people. This is up to public safety. I think
to understand the estimate correctly, I think it's actually cutting their taxes $552. Yeah. But I guess what I'd say with one company of this size, I can't imagine that one way or another it really matters. I'm not even understanding, you know, the need for the bill. I mean, if it's all held within the same company.
That's
where the confusion falls. Representative Ruth.
The answer, currently, Rochester is in the lower amount. They're paying the $2. They would have to be reassessed to go up, so then they would end up paying more. So it's just going to stay the same. It'll just still be at $2. Everybody would be at $2.
Okay, Representative Cole. Representative Lanning.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. As I see this, what we're simply doing here is saying a bus is a bus, regardless what size of city it operates in. And if we're concerned about the $500 and some, let's raise it to $3 and be done with it.
Yes, I think Representative Lanning has captured the confusion in the room. So Representative Ruth for the comments, or Ms. McCormick?
Madam Chair, the only comment I'd want to make is that DBS is fee-based, and so we believe our costs have been taken care of, and we're just using the tax that is currently in the statutes, and that's why the tax is staying as what it is.
Okay. Thank you. And Representative Ruth, trust me, you do not want your bill to become the vehicle for the omnibus Senate tax bill. So, you know what happened to Representative Joe last year as he got up and explained the income tax proposal. So, I appreciate everyone's interest in this bill, and thank you, Representative Ruth. And we're going to, unless there are further questions or if anybody wanted to testify from the public either for or against, I'm going to go ahead and lay the bill over then for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Representative Ruth. Thank you, Ms. McCormick. And now let's on quarantine. Let's see. Who is this? Representative Mullery, did you want to move this bill to Minneapolis Park? Bill, Representative Mullery moves House File 3323 for Representative Hornstein. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. House File 3323 is enabling language to allow the Minneapolis Park Board to impose a park dedication fee. The legislature voted fairly large numbers to do a version of this, I believe last year or the year before, and we're just simply adding commercial and industrial to the eligible properties to have this dedication fee imposed. This is language that the City Council was interested in adding to the already previous legislation, so we have the support of the Minneapolis City Council and the Minneapolis Park Board. To sum up, members, we just want to allow Minneapolis to do what many other communities already across the state do with park dedication fees.
Yeah.
Thank you. Are there questions for Representative Hornstein? Or testimony for or against Representative Hornstein?
No, we're pretty good.
No one? Wow, that eminent domain legislation has really silenced the world, I guess. Yeah. I'm not sure what's happened. Okay, if there are no questions, we're going to lay this over for possible... Actually, hang on a minute, Representative Hornstein. Yeah, I think you want to have this one sent to the floor, right?
Yeah.
Is that right? And do you know if you need to go through Ways and Means? This is not a tax bill. This is the dedication of fees.
I mean, last time we went straight to the floor.
Okay.
Before that fee...
Okay, then members, Representative Mullery moves that this bill be passed and referred to the General Register. Representative Gemma.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a real quick question, Representative Hornstein. Is there a, how do most of these fees get calculated? Is this just the discretion of the City Council or Met Council, I guess, or who?
Well,
Park and Met Board and City Council.
Madam Chair, Representative Gemma, it's not, wouldn't be the Metropolitan Council, it's the Minneapolis Park Board, but I do have a representative of the park board to clarify that.
Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members Kirk Peterson with Rice, Michaels, and Walter representing the Minneapolis Park Board. Representative, the statute isn't clear, or doesn't prescribe how we would define the park dedication fee. Different cities do it differently throughout the entire state. Some of them do it on a per unit or a per lot basis. Other cities do it on a percentage of land value or percentage of fair market value. And so different cities do it differently.
Okay, well, thank you, Madam Chair. I see we're also expanding it so that you can also impose a fee on use the money for trails. It appears that Representative Hornstein is doing that also. So we're expanding it so that they can charge a fee for commercial and industrial development, and that they can also use the fees for both housing and the commercial and industrial development for trails in addition to the other uses. Is that the gist of what you're doing?
Madam Chair, Representative, I think you've summarized the essence of the bill.
Yes.
Okay.
Do you have a comment on that, Representative, Mr. Peterson?
No.
Okay. You know, Representative Demmer, I was just asking Mr. Michael, and it's really not fair to ask him because this is not the local government committee, but I think that cities who have these, not the Minneapolis Park Board, can use it on anything they want currently. I think your city can and mine, so I'm not sure about being concerned of what uses these go to anyhow, because I think if you pay a park dedication fee, say, in the city of Bloomington, it goes to the general fund, is my understanding, but we could check that out. The League of Minnesota Cities or others could tell us. Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chair, the overriding statute indicates that the park dedication has to have a direct nexus to the land that is being used for. So it does have to be in direct relation to the area that you're imposing the fee on. Has to be a direct nexus to the project that it's being used for.
Well, and Mr. Peterson, I know that there has to be for purposes of raising it, but I think for spending it, you can spend it any old place you want. I think if a city can argue that if you have a bunch of commercial industrial buildings and the people who go to lunch there then take a walk around the park there at the lunch hour, that's plenty of nexus. So it's where can you then spend the money? I think, I don't know if the League of Minnesota Cities, I think they're here if they want to get involved in this. Unless Representative Demmer, you feel like you've had a good enough answer that you're supportive. I'm not sure if you want more information or... Nope. Okay. If not, Representative Muller renews his motion. All those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed say nay. The bill is passed and sent to the General Register.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you. I have a bill up, and we also are going to take public testimony on House Bill 4103. I think if it's all right with folks, I'll get my bill out of the way, and then we'll go to public testimony on the whole corporate subsidy bill. So, thank you. If I could move House File 4169. Great. Okay, members, this is a TIF bill for the City of Bloomington, and if I may, Madam Chair, I would like to ask our city manager, and I'm not sure of your new title, a member of our city staff to let folks know what the project is. This is an extension from the five-year rule, so I think this should be in your packets, although I don't know if I saw it in mine. Or maybe they're being passed out. A picture of the part of Bloomington we're looking at so you can understand the project.
Okay.
For the record, state your name and title.
I'm Jill Hutmacher. My current title is Acting Port Administrator.
And I'm Mark Bernardson, City Manager, City of Bloomington.
Great. Thank either one of you want to see the project.
We're just going to quickly run through some of the graphics that you've been provided to explain what the project is and why we need this extension of the five-year rule. The first graphic you see is an 11 by 17 sheet showing the density of the site at full build-out. It's a 50-acre transit-oriented development site. It's the largest transit-oriented development in this region, one of the largest in the country. The Hiawatha Light Rail line runs through the project and has a station at Bloomington Central Station, right by the Health Partners headquarters.
Nice to interrupt you for members. If you're looking at it, if you can kind of imagine it this way, this is the airport. For folks who know where the airport is, we're kind of near the airport, and then the Mall of America is to the west. This is not the Mall of America project. This is easterly up.
Oh, that's too bad.
In the very back is probably a better, if you want to look at the proximity of the site, it's probably a better graphic to show you in the, I've got it put down. Oh, yeah, so I put up. You see the Hiawatha Light Rail running through the site. Up in the north is the airport in 484, and in this corner you see the Mall of America. So it gives you some idea of where it is in the metro area here in Bloomington. Back to, sorry for the page switching, back to large feet. And it says the density of the site at peak development is a transit-oriented development, and some renderings of the future buildings that will be constructed on this site. The next page you have is a site plan of the site. There will be eventually 6 office buildings plus the health partners' headquarters, which will be expanding within the project time period, as well as 6 residential condominium buildings, and the 7th residential building is Reflection Condominium Tower, which has already been built. This is a phased project. Obviously, this is too much development that the market can absorb in a very short period of time within the 5 years required by the TIF statute. It is intended that these developments be phased in years when the market is ready for them, and the infrastructure that is needed for each building, each development piece, is only built at the time that the associated, the related private development is occurring. We're not going in right now and building all of these internal roads and the sewer and the stormwater facilities. We are building them, phasing into whiskey buildings. And total expected to be built 2 million square feet of office, a 300-room hotel, 1,100 residential units, 75,000 square feet of retail space, and approximately 1.6-acre park. The park is completed, as well as 263 residential units in the Reflection Tower. And if you flip this sheet over on the back, you'll see a list of all the buildings and the anticipated construction start for those buildings. You can see it stretches from the 2005 construction start of Reflection to 2017, the last office tower. And since the infrastructure for these projects will not be developed until these buildings are developed, we will be incurring costs and issuing bonds well into the future for these projects. And just at the bottom there, you'll see a picture of the Reflection Condominium Tower, 263 units, complete in July of 2006. As of now, about 84% of those units are closed or pending closing, which, given the residential and condominium market in the last few years, is actually doing very well. They're selling
very,
units.
Very impressive.
Yeah. They're selling units on a very steady basis.
We tried condos in Cannon Falls 2 years ago for the first time, and I think they sold 3 out of 60, so it doesn't work in all parts of the state.
And just 2 more graphics you have. I think one of them we've already looked at. The last one, the land assemblage. This is an aerial of the site prior to any community development, and it shows you what we need the TIF for. What you see is a lot of surface parking. There was no, this is a controlled data headquarters, no provision for stormwater. What we're building, what we're using the TIF money for is to build the interior roads as well as a few of the improvements that need to happen around the site to allow better access to and from the site, stormwater, another utility infrastructure. So we're asking for is the 5-year TIF rule requires that the expenditures be made within the first 5 years of the district, but with a phased project such as this, that really doesn't work for our project. It is our understanding that several cities have asked for and have received extensions or exemptions of the 5-year rule, including Onamia, Park Rapids, Brooklyn Park, Burnsville, and some others.
Okay. Any questions from members? Representative Cole.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For Representative Lenchewski or your witness, I see that the last
the office tower and the last residential are slated to go in 2017. Is the 10-year extension we're giving you, does that take effect when we pass this, or does it go back in time? And are we giving you enough time to do what it is you say you need to do?
Well, Representative Coles, Madam Chair, the City of Bloomington asked for more than I'm doing in my bill. So you can understand that they might like your idea there. But members, with consultation with Mr. Michael and looking at all the cities, as was mentioned, there's been a lot of cities that have had exemptions from the five-year rule. This isn't about approving the TIF. This is a TIF parcel. This is about the knockdown rule. There have been a number that have had longer extensions than this, actually, but I felt conservatively it's best to start at this point, but I'm certain that our city manager would accept your amendment.
Madam Chair and Chair Linchevsky, I apologize for posing the questions. I sit on the floor of the House. I typically don't like asking questions I don't know the answer to. I didn't mean to put you on the spot, Representative Linchevsky, but thank you for the explanation.
Well, and it's not putting me on the spot. I think it works for what they're trying to do in the short term with a 9-year extension, but it was kind of in the middle, so Mr. Michael did it at 10 for me. And certainly the TIF working group will take a longer look at this and think about it more. But this is the pattern we've seen in these large phase developments, that they're not doing extra dollars. They're wanting the clock to start at a different time because of the phasing of the development. But I do know that cities often feel that just because another city has some exemption that they should get it too. And I've expressed in my own city that I'm not one of the people who believe that. They have to make the case, and I think in this property, this McGough property, they've got a very sound case for this extension, but that, of course, will be up to the thoughts of the TIF working group and the full committee then later.
Representative Lanny.
Hey, thank you, Madam Chair. A couple of questions. Is it just two of these projects that have been completed so far? That's one question. The second question is, how much of this part of the project itself is publicly owned versus privately owned?
One of you.
There's been two components to the project, actually three components to the project completed so far, Madam Chair and members. The Reflections Condominium Tower has been completed, as well as an expansion of a smaller expansion, not the larger expansion, a smaller expansion, and quite a bit of renovation of the Health Partners building, and the completion of the Central Park. The developer is currently planning, they're working towards development, the hotel development, which they expect to begin construction on later this year, a 300-room, full-service business hotel. And
Madam Chair, Representative Lanning, the park is in a unique public-private relationship, and that they are the maintainer of that park, and there is no other public development per se at all, except for the streets are under a public-private partnership. But apart from that, it's almost exclusively private development.
Thank you. Is there anyone from the public that would like to testify for or against the bill? If not, Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Minister. I'm just wondering if there's any part of Bloomington that's not in a TIF district.
You know,
Representative Winchesky.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, Representative Earhart, I'm so glad you asked that, because Bloomington is actually a very low user of TIF compared to most of the state. So I'm happy to tell you that. When I was on our city council, we, and they still have, a self-imposed TIF limit as a percentage of their net tax capacity. It's not a hard rule. It's not done by ordinance. They certainly could violate it if they wanted to. And when I came here as a legislator, I actually introduced a bill to make the whole state have to have a percentage of their net tax capacity in TIF. I didn't prevail. But I do think that that's still something we should consider doing. We have some cities in the state of Minnesota that really do have massive amounts of their tax base in TIF. And it might surprise people to know that Bloomington is not one of them. In
if I may, Madam Chair, the city manager could probably tell us exactly what percentage of Bloomington's tax base is in a TIF district.
Mr. Bernardson?
Yeah. Representative Kisk, Madam Chair, Representative Earhart. I think we're, and I have to look to Ms. Hudmacher, I think we're under 10% at this point. As the numbers changed, I used to know the number right off the top of my head, but as the numbers changed with 2001 tax reform and affected it, but I think we're under 10%. Is that right at 10%?
Madam Chair, I hope that Representative Earhart is going to vote to continue to keep large TIF projects out of Bloomington. This one actually, members, already has a TIF district. This bill is not creating a TIF district to some extent in the knockdown, but there are other large proposals yet to be considered this year that would dramatically increase the percentage of TIF. So thank you for that, Madam Chair.
Well, members don't get it. I can't often to pick on you, so I see Representative Simpson also wants to ask a question.
Well, this isn't picking. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just curious, how does this measure up compared to what the Mall of America's proposal is as far as TIF? Is this equal to what they're asking for, or is this completely different? Are we extending this TIF for the Mall of America, or is that new TIF?
Representative Lynch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Simpson, you know, we don't know what the Mall of America is quite asking, and we're going to hear that bill on, I believe, April 22nd, so we'll be able to have the City of Bloomington staff here and the Mall of America and all the interested parties so we can ask them all those questions. I can tell you what I do know is the mall proposal 3 years ago was Caesar's Palace, then it was a 25-year TIF extension, then it was a seven-year TIF extension plus FD. Last year it was changing the TIF boundaries plus FD plus some local sales taxes. The Senate has just introduced a new proposal and added it to the Senate Omnibus Tax Bill, and so I asked Representative Nelson, who's the chief author of the Mall of America proposal in the House, to come to the Tax Committee and show us what he is proposing as the author in the House, and at that time we'll be able to take a real long look. My preliminary understanding, and they know I'm not a supporter of the proposal, so trust me, they're not checking in with me, is that there is still a TIF extension in the project, but this proposal is not linked to that proposal in any way.
Well, to that point, so are we opening the door for the next project then, if we approve this one?
And sir, Representative, no, this TIF district's already approved. It's already underway. It's just an extension to the 5-year knockdown rule. So the TIF is already on the land now.
All right. With that, Representative Lentesky lays over her bill for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill.
Thank you.
And thank you.
Okay, with that, I think city manager is probably concerned that maybe if we get into the Mall of America, that's a big another proposal, and we will get into that, and we want everybody who's involved in that discussion to be here on that day, so we'll look forward to that. And I appreciate the question, though, because I know people are being very lobbied hard in this, are being lobbied very hard by all the Mall of America lobbyists on that proposal right now, and folks want to understand it better, so we'll be spending time on that soon. I would like to call up House File 4103 back before us to continue to make public testimony. When we had this last, and maybe there is no more testimony, we got through the FOC and Tax Haven and royalties provisions before we, because I wanted that done before we were able to vote on any of those. But the bill is much larger than that. It had the JobZ provisions, the R&D provisions, and more. So is there anyone else who wanted to testify on File 4103? We have a few people signed up. Jill Larson, although she testified before. I don't know if she still wants to. I don't see her. Oh, she's here. Come on down if you want to testify again. Nope, she's shaking her head. No, Louis Jamboy. Here he is here. And Chris Ermner-Mitten. Welcome, Mr. Jamboy.
Madam Chair and members, thank you very much. Again, my name is Louis Jamboy. I'm the Executive Director of Metro Cities, and we represent 86 cities in the Twin Cities metropolitan area, including the core cities, fully developed, developing and yet to be developed cities. I'm here today to just talk about sections 9 and 10, and those are the provisions, the TIF provisions, that include, as Minnesota development subsidies as taxable income, and then defines a federal property tax deduction of a TIF or abatement beneficiary as a development subsidy. We of course appreciate the challenge that you and the legislature face to attempt to address another shortfall, but I'm afraid we have to express our concerns about defining federal TIF and abatement related property tax deductions as income. TIF and abatement are broad and pretty flexible tools that can be used for housing and economic development projects. And often these tools are used to fill a financial gap that exists between the cost of the project and the available public and private resources. And while gap financing is usually associated with redeveloping contaminated property or previous development, GAP is not exclusive to those projects, and TIF as GAP financing is also used for economic development deals for emerging companies that may fit a GAP definition. TIF is used for housing development, affordable housing development, and TIF is sometimes used for businesses that have an opportunity to make locational decisions out of the state or perhaps even out of the country. But when we get back to the GAP side of the game, when we're talking about defining a TIF or abatement related deduction as income, we'll simply increase the size of the gap in a project. The result is that either another source has to be found or increased to fill that gap, the project is developed elsewhere, or the project isn't done at all. We would recommend that if there's interest in continuing the conversation about this, that perhaps we should start with the definition of what is and what is not a business subsidy in 116J.993 subdivision 3, and weigh that definition against the definition of a development subsidy that's in this bill. In brief, examples of assistance that are not a business subsidy in 116J993 include the redevelopment of polluted property, the renovation of old or deteriorating buildings, TIF for soils condition districts, TIF for hazardous hazardous substance sub-districts, TIF for assistance for housing and for redevelopment projects where the site acquisition and site prep are more than 70% of the assessor's market value. When the business subsidy statute was created, several people worked real hard to exempt the exemptions that I just mentioned, because the social benefit of these activities was often commensurate with the economic gain derived by a business who located on those sites. And we also think that the business subsidy statute may be a good point for consideration of this issue and some consistency of what's considered a business subsidy and what is taxable income under a Minnesota development subsidy in this bill may be advisable. And with that, Madam Chair and members, I'll conclude and take any questions if you've got them.
Questions for Mr. Zamboy? Well, thank you, Mr. Jim. I actually agree with you that there is some nuancing in there that could be done. I mean, certainly the bill I just had, you know, this I would hope you would think would qualify as something that's a business subsidy. But I hear what you're saying in polluted lands and some of the affordable housing, and it might need to be nuanced a bit. But I do believe tax increment financing is a subsidy. And so that provision in my bill was an attempt to get at that, and the out year shows the $19 million cost for those provisions that we have now. So I appreciate your testimony. I agree with you that if the tax committee were to go forward with it, there's probably
legitimate TIF uses that wouldn't make sense to require folks to count this against their income situation. But there's certainly a lot of large companies that are getting to write off a property tax that they're really just paying to themselves, and so they still get the subsidy, they just have to pay taxes on it in the provision. So I appreciate that, and I'll work with you and others who want to finesse this a little bit, and I'm sure there will be other members of the tax committee who are interested in that as well.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Other testimony? Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of this committee. My name is Christina Smitten, and I'm here on behalf of Minnesota Brownfields also to express concerns with Section 9 and 10. In the proposed language that related to the elimination of tax deductions for property and TIF districts and taxes paid for abatement property, Minnesota Brownfields is a nonprofit organization dedicated to promoting efforts that support and enhance the reuse and redevelopment of brownfields throughout the state of Minnesota. The proposed amendment to add Subdivision 33 will greatly impact the economic feasibility of redevelopment activities located in TIF districts. Brownfield properties, often located within our urban settings with adequate infrastructure, are complex and difficult to develop. Imposing additional disincentives will lead to underutilization of these sites, which in turn leads to blight and other negative community impacts. Minnesota Brownfields is committed to activities that support redevelopment of sites to stabilize and increase tax base, that provide employment opportunities in renew blighted areas. We are discouraged with this proposed amendment in that it will add yet another and quite significant hurdle to redevelopment activities, which are vital for our city's economic stability, and we ask for your reconsideration of the proposed language. Also with us today is Mr. McClay Hyde with Real Estate Recycling and a member of Minnesota Brownfields, and we are happy to help answer any questions that you may have.
Okay, thank you. Nice to see that you're here. Are there questions on the Brownfield part of TIF?
Yes.
So I think you must have heard my comments, Mr. Chamberlain, and so I will work with you on that as well. I think the folks on this committee who care a lot about TIF understand the purely public good attempts that are being made with TIF and the ones that are just a corporate subsidy. So I realize that you're in a different situation than just a corporate subsidy to Company X. So I appreciate your testimony.
Absolutely. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. There further anyone from the public who would like to testify on House File 4103. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Phil Griffin. I'm here representing Life Science Alley, a trade association representing over 500 companies doing business, mainly in the healthcare and biosciences world. And with me is Doug Carnival.
Madam Chair, Doug Carnival, representing Minnesota High Tech Association, over 300 companies in Minnesota in the high tech area.
Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. If we could just briefly address the issues related to the proposed repeal of the R&D tax credit. The research and development tax credit is something that we think is particularly important to Minnesota's future economic status. And I want to just begin by quoting briefly state economist Tom Stinson from the Star Tribune editorial piece that he published on January 30th, in which he said, "As we try and work at making better economic sense of our tax system, it means staying clear in our state budgeting process of cuts in education spending from preschool through higher education. It means avoiding health care cuts that push the working poor out of the workforce. And I would add it with emphasis, it means shifting tax burdens away from business investment, particularly research and development." Madam Chair, we believe that the research and development tax credit addresses a clear market failure. Because companies seldom retain all of the benefits of their research, particularly riskier and earlier stage research, economists find that companies systematically underinvest in R&D. A principal economic rationale for establishing the R&D credit is to reduce the difference between private and actual rate of returns by lowering the cost of privately financed research. The R&D tax credit boosts the business climate for high-tech investments, since all high-tech jobs pay more than 75% more than non-high-tech jobs and on an overall average. R&D jobs pay on average $70,000 per year in Minnesota. And there's also what we call a 2.5 spinoff, which results in 2.5 jobs coming from each one of those new jobs. The vast majority of corporate tax breaks simply reward companies for doing what they already do, and the R&D tax credits have an advantage of providing a vital economic stimulus. The research and development tax credit, we think, is capital intensive, both in human capital and dollars and cents. Eliminating the R&D tax credit will decrease the incentive for Minnesota's knowledge-based industry to invest in job creation in Minnesota. At least 32 other states are making concerted efforts to increase their R&D tax credits and provide other incentives to attract and expand these kinds of jobs in their states. Minnesota does not have a monopoly on skilled scientists or engineers in medical technology, biotechnology, or computers, and in a reduction in Minnesota's credit makes other states' efforts easier. In the high-tech world of computers and medical technologies, companies must innovate or die. Decreasing these incentives to R&D will damage the long-term health of Minnesota's high-tech industries. If the R&D tax, if R&D facilities are established or expanded in other states, the spin-off of new companies will not happen here. A Harvard study found that Medtronic alone is responsible for 156 other medical device companies in Minnesota. This R&D tax credit does not have to be the highest in the world to be effective, but it must remain competitive. Our R&D tax credit is one of the lowest in the country, and we do not think that it makes Minnesota an attractive state to do business in. Madam Chair, growing mid-sized firms could be especially hurt. These companies with revenues from 550 to 500 million, employing 500 people or less, are the most rapidly growing and tend to reinvest all the profits of their R&D tax credit. We think that these small companies really can use this R&D tax credit to bank this credit as they move forward towards that time when they become profitable. Madam Chair, this is an extremely important part of the tax code, even though it's a small provision. I've tried to give you a number of points as to why we think it's important to keep. If there are questions that we have, we'd be happy to provide the committee with further business, further items. But I'd turn to Mr. Carnival if he wants to talk about it. But we aren't competing here with just what's going on in North and South Dakota, but we really are competing with some of the research centers of the world. And our neighbors to the east of us in Wisconsin are making some concerted efforts, as well as places like Virginia and Massachusetts and California. That's the place we're competing with these days. Madam Chair, members, if there are questions, otherwise I turn to Mr. Kerner.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I just want to echo what Phil said. Our association, the High Tech Association, has been advocating for a number of years to increase the tax credit, not eliminate it. So we think this is headed in exactly the wrong direction. Peter Lindstrom, who is our vice president, has prepared a letter that we'll distribute to the members here. He unfortunately couldn't be here this afternoon. So I just want to echo what Mr. Griffith said, say that this is a very, very important issue as we compete here in Minnesota and across the world. Happy to take your questions.
Thank you for that. And, may I just put it to the two of you, and I, of course, understand why you would oppose that provision in my bill. But I also, we have that deficit, and the deficit may grow, and we have to start picking and choosing between what government should be purchasing. And as you know, I thought the corporate subsidies are a good place to start. They're definitely competing with the rest of the parts of the budget. But, what you've got going for you here is you're only about half the size of the Job Z program, which is costing us double what RC is costing us.
We have no comment on that.
Yes, well, you shouldn't. But, there's a lot of things going on. I mean, we just heard from the TIF folks, and these are all, things that taxpayers are paying for the benefit of someone else. One thought I had, and I have to say it's just a real preliminary thought. I haven't spoken to any of the authors about this at all, but Representative Dabney and Mahoney and Winkler and Lanning are some of the authors, and maybe Paulson, I'm not sure if he's got a bill, who have bills that, would be well received, I would imagine, by high tech and bioscience and other folks who are looking for R&D. And having not heard those bills yet, and they're all scheduled, and we're going to be hearing them all, preliminarily it seemed like those are a little more, look a little more effective than the current program, and I don't like any of them, personally, but I don't get to decide. This group gets to decide. I mean, one thought I had is, maybe you could put your heads together and talk to folks in your world and see what you think about repealing the current ones and instead selectively choosing some of the new concepts of some of the new authors who are looking to do some targeted investment in R&D across the state. Obviously, given the state budget situation, we're looking to net out as a revenue raiser overall, but we heard even those who were defending your R&D credits like a week or so ago, use words like anemic, and they're really, Minnesota is not doing that well compared to other states, and I hear what you're saying, you'd rather, don't kill it, I mean, make it better. I'm in the kill it column, but the make it better column folks, I think might argue that their bills are better ideas than the current situation we've got. So I hope you'd be willing to think about that and think about those items with those offers, because we certainly don't have revenues to do new builds. And so one way to potentially bring some of these offers ideas forward is to find some, to remove some of these provisions. So I just, you know, hope you'll be thinking about that as an option. And I don't know if you have any initial comment on what I've just said. I'm just throwing it out there.
Madam Chair, you can be sure that we'll work with all of those offers that you mentioned. There are lots of different ways to skin a cat, and this may not be the best. So whatever incentives we can provide for businesses to grow, especially in the technology field here in Minnesota, we're eager to talk about.
Okay, I think all those bills are being heard next week.
I think so. Next week.
So, just trying to think about it all together.
Is it this week?
This week. Oh, is it? Oh, okay. Representative Lanning, you have one of those bills, right?
Right, on Wednesday.
Wednesday. Okay. So take a good look at all those bills and think about all that, because we really can't do all things, and sometimes to do something new, you have to get rid of something old, and I guess that's just one way I'd encourage you to take a look. Representative Coles and then Representative Wolf. Representative Coles.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As a former author of bills to increase the R&D tax credit, I find the testimony of the witnesses incredibly compelling, but I'm not going to make a speech about that or about jobs or whatever. I have a question about the revenue note, so maybe for Mr. Michael or for somebody from the department. I see here that the estimates based on estimates published in the 2008-2011 tax expenditure budget. I'm just curious at the number, not for fiscal year 09, but the number in the out years, and why we see a three times growth between 09 and 2010. The number jumps from 5.1 million up to 17.4 million, and I'm just curious what's behind that, and other than the 2008 to 2011 tax expenditure budget, because that doesn't mean much to me without it in front of me.
Mr. Mike.
Madam Chair, Representative Coles, that simply reflects the phase-in of the repeal. This repeal is effective for tax year 09, and so for fiscal 09, you only recognize a fraction of the cost, and then there's natural growth in the program, too.
Madam
Chair, it's now very clear to me where that number's come from. I get it now. It's a little slow on the uptake.
Representative Coles, no, you're not slow at all either, because, you know, I mean, take the job Z and you look at the number, go further down in your estimate, and you could think, you know, it's hard to know always what you mean. Remember, the job Z isn't even a full repeal. So the number you see there at 26.7 million in 2010 and in 2011, 28.4, that's only a partial. That's me kind of going halfway, setting up a grant fund to give the money to folks who are legitimate and keep it alive. So I guess, until you asked, Mr. Michael, I forgot it was a phase-in in myself, and it's my own bill. So,
Madam Chair, I'm not going to take much more time. I'm not going to, you know, pound on the table. But I do think this is sending absolutely the wrong message to the exact type of jobs that we want to see grow here in Minnesota. So I appreciate the offer for the folks from to work with the other authors who have other ideas about how we might be able to make this work. But, you know, we heard a lot of discussion during the bonding bill and the transportation bill about jobs. And here we're sending what I think is an anti-job message. So I understand you're looking for money and revenue, and I understand your concern about corporate subsidies. But this is one that I think I've been convinced over the years is worthwhile having. And so I'm happy to hear you at least open to other ideas if we're not going to do the straight credit, if we can find another way to do something so that we're not chasing these jobs to California or Massachusetts or North Carolina. Thanks.
Thank you for that. I'm Wolfmeyer.
Mr. Turnbull or Mr. Griffin, you know, as I look at House File 4103, I mean, there are certainly provisions in it that business likes. I mean, it's got the corporate income tax rate from 9.8 to 8.8. So it's hard for me to figure out when businesses come forward and, you know, just choose one component to complain about, because I'm struggling with a few of these components too, but I'm trying to look at it as a whole, not as a part. So that said, you know, if you can comment on that, on the bill as a whole, because I do think that's what Representative Lentesky was trying to get at, is that she was giving a corporate rate reduction in addition to some of these cuts. And then the second thing is, I think I did hear you on NPR representative, or Mr. Carnival, about this Harvard study of Medtronic, you know, creating 150 new companies as a result. And I guess what ran through my mind when you said that was, you know, just a return on investment would be higher for perhaps some of these provisions over others. So that might be something to just think about as we go forward. If we are going to kind of tear apart this bill and, you know, try and figure out which one should we keep and which one should go, maybe that's one way to rank them would be the ROI. So just a thought.
Madam Chair, Representative Wolfschlager, I think you hit on two good points. One of them is that we as a business community do need to be responsible for looking at the budget as a whole. It's not something that we can just look at little pieces. But the reason we're here as an association of people in Life Science Alley is to represent those companies that are working in that particular area. And this is one of those taxes that really does hit that particular area, and our members are very, very concerned about it. It's why we picked out that one tax. In response to that question, but in response to your other question, that's why I led off with that quote from Chief State Economist Stinson, is that we talk not just about how we move forward in one little area, but talk about the need to make sure that we don't do things that cut education, that cut health care for people who are poor, and that we look at very specific issues in terms of business taxes and how they will impact us for growth in the future. And that's why we think this one is so important, because it really does send a message. If we have a large manufacturer who decides to move an R&D facility or build a new one out of state, and we've had this happen in the past few years simply because we aren't competitive, that is of concern to us, because these are the really good jobs that we want to keep here.
Thank you. No? Further questions? Dr. Maury.
Madam Chair, I don't care whether Doug or Phil, you say since we're not competitive, I in the past have had research both here and at the Department of Revenue try to figure out the difference between where we are and others, and they said that it's so complicated and so many different ways of approaching it that they can't tell whether we're the best or the worst or in between. They said we're definitely not one of the worst, but we're probably not maybe number one, but there's a lot of estimates. They could, this is nonpartisan staff, that think we're very high on what we're doing.
Madam Chair, I think what Bill was talking about was the fact that there are many other states whose R&D tax credits are substantially higher than ours, and provide much more of an incentive for companies to locate their R&D facilities in those communities. Now, I don't know what the results have been in terms of actual investment in those communities. Bill might have a better idea.
Mr. Griffin.
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Miller, I think my response would be simply that if you look at a comparison with all of the states, that's probably very accurate. My response would be that we're not really competing with North and South Dakota. We're not competing with Kansas, Missouri, Alabama. But there are a few states in which we are really in a major competitive race, and they include states like I mentioned, Wisconsin, Massachusetts, the Carolinas, with their research triangle, California. And those are the ones where we see substantially higher, and those are the ones where we're competing.
Dr. Moore.
Madam Chair, what I was referring to is not just what they were pointing out is just the percentage. Maybe we're not the highest percentage, but that if you took on all the factors and everything, that we could be either the highest or next to the highest.
And Madam Chair, Representative Mulder, these are important issues that you need to look at and that we've been working on. In fact, we're delighted to see the governor's line item vetoes not take some of the projects out that we think are absolutely essential and that you included in your bonding bill for the University of Minnesota and for MinSCU to complete science lab changes and to add on the bioscience buildings. Those are as important as whatever else you're doing. It's a combination of all of those things. You're absolutely right. But we think that this is also one of those essential issues.
Well,
Madam,
Dr. Maury.
Maybe I'm not getting through. Just the rate, the percentage rate, is not the only factor. It's what goes into computing the whole thing, and I'm wondering where you're getting that source that we aren't among the top or the very top, when I'm hearing from staff that we could easily be there if you include all of the factors that go into it.
Madam Chair, Representative Mulder, I think I understand your question now. I will have to get back to you, if I could, with some of the numbers that we're comparing in those other states with what we have here, and see if I can convince you with those numbers.
Thank you. Thank you. Rep. Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Griffith, I have to take issue with you on the points you're making about we're not competing with North Dakota. Let me assure you, representing a border community, we very definitely are competing with North Dakota. We're going to hear the bill on Wednesday. North Dakota provides a 45% investment tax credit to new business development. North Dakota beats Minnesota time and time again on bringing research dollars, federal dollars, into the state of North Dakota, much more than the state of Minnesota does. And I can save the rest of the speech for later, but maybe from your perspective down here, you don't see that competition, but let me assure you, we see it.
Madam Chair, Representative Lanning, I stand corrected. I should have used South Dakota and Iowa as better examples. it's very interesting that over the past 2 years, we've seen a marked increase in the number of people from North Dakota who are attending Life Science Valley's annual expo. And we've had numerous conversations with some of the work that's going on at both NDSU and at the University of North Dakota, in which they're making very major efforts in the world of science and technology. I would acknowledge that.
Further questions? To both of you, I thank you for your testimony. I know that there are a lot of members in this committee bipartisanly who care a lot about your bucket of issues, so it's certainly going to get its attention. I do want to tell you, though, it is a little frustrating when often we hear from the business community that the number one reason businesses will stay or go is our corporate tax rate, or our income tax rate, or our property taxes, or R&D, or, you know, it's kind of, to be competitive in all of them, I think there's no state that could make that claim, that they are the most competitive for business in income tax, or in corporate tax, or in property tax. I mean, everyone's pushing the same levers and trying to put a bucket together to attract different kinds of businesses. And I have to tell you, my bias is that government's really bad at that, just in general. Government is not good at being a market capitalist. That's not government's role. And when government tries to figure out how to, appeal to companies by picking and choosing, it generally, when the data comes out later, most of it would have happened anyhow. It's kind of a zero-sum game, and, I actually wish the Congress would stop states from engaging in a lot of these battlegrounds between states that are just paid for by taxpayers, and there's no net gain nationally. There may be states that are gaining if they're better at it than others, just like in the world of tax increment financing. I mean, the state of Minnesota got out of the business. Now we have cities doing war with each other. No net sum gain for most of those projects either. It's just, did Development X go to, Winona or Wilmer? I mean, it's not a net gain for the state of Minnesota or for its taxpayers. But if you're that local mayor, it's very difficult for you to see that, or if you see it, you don't care because it's not your job to run the state. But we as legislators, it is our job. So we have to think about, what are all these corporate subsidies doing and at what cost? And so I think with, looking at them all, you have a little bit better argument than most of them, I mean, I guess, in the world of R&D. But I think something that the tax committee needs to get its head around is how it defines R&D. I've heard people call things like the Mall of America a legitimate corporate subsidy that creates jobs. Okay, is that R&D now? I think everybody would say no. So on the continuum of reading Dr. Stinson's quote, I think most people would understand that if you're going to have government try to create jobs, it would create the jobs you're talking about, not jobs at the Mall of America. I mean, I think that should be pretty obvious to most folks, that that would be a better use of taxpayers' money. But even the R&D definition is complicated. I mean, I hear people talk about their projects as R&D that I would never call R&D. So I think in general, for me, the U of M sort of research and development, that kind of expenditure is the more appropriate way for government to engage in R&D in the first place. And I think we can look at the Medtronics and go, now that worked. That's really great. But how do we as government, who's particularly bad at this, make those determinations in the market? I mean, we're just not well-suited
as elected officials or governing bodies to do these sort of negotiations with private entities who know what they need to do to compete. And so I just think the default is better to invest in what government's role is and to stay out of the market to the best of its ability. But I would encourage you again to go back to these authors who are taking a new shot at a more selective, targeted shot and see what you can maybe work on with them, because again, I think that the R&D has a little more defensible economic policy than most of the other stuff going on in the tax code, but even still, I'm sort of suspect that the net gain is very, very much.
Madam Chair, I mean, we will definitely speak with the other authors, but I suggest that before we abandon something that's on the books that is there and provide some opportunity for businesses to grow here in the areas that we're seeing high-paying jobs result from, that we at least not do any harm and give the world the note that we are abandoning our R&D tax credit, letting folks know that you're not welcome here because this is not a good place to invest in your R&D operation. So I suggest we move with caution before we abandon this, even though we are talking about other alternatives.
Well, Mr. Carnival, to that, I mean, I want to tell you one of the frustrating parts for all of us on the government side of the table is we can't have those sort of private proprietary negotiations with companies to know that if you would ask them point blank, what's more important, an R&D credit or a corporate tax cut? You can't know the answer to that. I mean, you'd be surprised how these provisions are affecting different companies. Some love pieces, some hate pieces, some have one they really like and one they really hate. You know, you could be company X and get an R&D credit, but you got a big TIF proposal working there too that you're deducting off your taxes every year, and you're an FOC. I mean, so trying to figure out who's doing what and who's loving these provisions and not liking them is complicated, and we can't put them in the position. I mean, they're welcome, but they're not going to come to the mic and open their books and say, well, I'm Medtronic, and this is we're in a TIF district, and we're an FOC, and we pay royalties, and, you know, we're just not going to hear them do that. For reasons that, you know, I understand. If I were part of that company, I wouldn't do it either. But we're all left trying to puzzle as we use, literally, you know, in this bill alone, $280 million of taxpayers' money for corporate subsidies, what's working and what isn't. And I think most of it is anecdotal, and we need to get to some better information. And so I'm glad to hear you'll just keep working on it with everyone.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam
Chair. Thank you. Further testimony in House File 4103.
Madam Chair.
Just a comment, as you're often your thoughts there, just a comment that I think that we have to keep in mind here is the fact that our unemployment rate in the state is probably as high as it's been in many years. And anything that we do in this tax committee will either help that unemployment rate or continue the growth of it. And I think we need to really keep that in mind as we're doing this. And we need to listen to this business community out here because they are in touch with the real world of what's happening with the competition in their businesses. So just food for thought as we move forward to keep that in mind.
And Rep. Simpson, I completely agree because a lot of these provisions actually help companies and some hurt companies. And so certainly some of them would impact jobs, but most actually would not or would even grow jobs, because if you're the company who is not a beneficiary of all these subsidies, which most Minnesotan companies are not, having those taken away so that your rate goes down, or let's say you're not a corporation, you're paying for the income tax system, your size of government that you have to pay for on your taxes now goes down, you're a beneficiary. So, you know, there's a lot of companies who receive some of these, but there's a lot more companies who don't receive any of them. And so not paying for that chunk of government sort of assists all the companies who are not beneficiaries of these subsidies. Welcome, Mr. Peterson.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Tom Peterson, Government Director of the Minnesota Farmers Union. To be very brief, we did want to go on the record as just opposing and urge you to consider not eliminating the bovine TB tax credits. And we did feel it was important to just say a few minutes, and also on behalf of the Farm Bureau and the milk, Minnesota milk producers and Minnesota cattlemen, they also want to be on the record as opposing it, especially in this time of, you know, kind of a crisis situation where at the end of this week, most likely our state will be downgraded from modified accredited advanced status of bovine TB to modified accredited status, and that's going to mean a lot more testing for farms. It's going to mean a lot more burden on our cattle producers. It already is. North Dakota, Wisconsin have already put restrictions on cattle movements within our states, and we just feel that this isn't the right time to do that. I feel it's an important tool. It is going to help a lot of producers. It is a tax credit on half of the tax. The tests run anywhere from, say, $7 to $20. We're hearing kind of in the range of $10 to $12 is probably more accurate. So if you have 50 head of cattle and you're subjected to testing, you can do the math probably as well as I can. The other parts of that are, it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the next week, because once we're downgraded, we're also at the same time applying to split out a portion of the state. And so it's kind of up in Representative Saylor, kind of in that area. And if we're able to eliminate or split that part of the state out, that'll also help us move a little faster. Not as many herds will have to be tested, especially dairy herds, because for all dairy farmers, and people represent a lot of dairy farmers in their area, all dairy farms may be subject to an annual test. And it's not just the cost of this does help a lot, and that's why it's important. But I asked some of the farmers, I talked to a farmer representative of Demers District, they also do testing just to see if it's showing up, like in the Rochester area. And the state does pay for that when they're just randomly sampling testing. But what they don't pay for is your time. And Representative Coonan's a former dairy. You can imagine if you have 90 head of dairy cattle and they tell you, we're coming to test your herd tomorrow. It can take a couple of days to run all those cattle in, test them, run all your young stock in, test them. He was telling me not only my time, but one slipped and fell. There's no compensation for that animal. It had to be destroyed. I've heard that from many producers that have been subjected by the state just for random testing. And also, you got to come back 3 days later and test them again, because that's the way the test works. It's, they prick the tail and then they come back to 3 days later to see if there's a bump there. So it's a real cumbersome, time-consuming process. And I think producers are kind of counting on this tax credit as something that will help us ease some of the pain. So I urge your consideration not eliminating that. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. And Representative Earhart.
Not exactly on the tax matter, Madam Chair, but is this transmittable to humans, the bovine, through meat or milk?
Mr. Peterson.
And Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, I'm not a... expert, but we've asked that question a lot, and they said as long as you cook your meat and the milk's pasteurized, that it's not transmittable. So it's a good idea to, as they always say, well, cook your food. So and again, it's 11 cows out of half a million that have tested positive, and so we are very confident in our food supply here in the United States and in Minnesota, and we're trying to knock it out as fast as possible, and so this will help.
Well, Mr. Peterson, I should tell you that Representatives Demmer and Simpson and Olin and Saylor and Coonan and Eakin and I don't know who all made crystal clear to me after I introduced this bill how important the bovine tuberculosis testing credit was. And I want you to know that I think the case has been made why it probably needs to remain in place. But I do want you to know that when I spoke with Mr. Michael about going through the tax code to find them, I didn't want anything left out. It was Representative Paulson who reminded me that we left out MetroPass. and Representative Michael had found, or Mr. Michael had found it, and then I forgot that they put it in. But it was meant to be a complete list, so we weren't picking winners in there. But I think members are going to have to go through that process as we get ready to put together the omnibus tax bill. I mean, I think because your item raises so little money, it's probably safe. But I thought it was fair for folks to see what are the corporate subsidies that are taking place in the corporate franchise tax. So I appreciate your testimony, but I think there's lots of members on both sides of the aisle who will fight dearly for that to remain in place.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I understand that, and just wanted to, so we did want to be on record and kind of understood that. And I would mention, heard from a producer in Representative Simpson's district that the tax credit does not cover buffalo. So that's another issue I just thought of. And one other thing on the tax credit that, we would obviously support it going away once we get rid of that status, too. So,
yes.
Appreciate that.
Well, Mr. Peterson, Representative Simpson's probably going to put that bill in now. He said that for Buffalo. And Mr. Peterson was in Representative Marquardt's committee where we had a long discussion about
the deer getting infected now, and how we're going to deal with all the counties that are going to need property tax exemptions. So this committee will hear more about bovine before the end of this year. So thank you for your testimony. Representative Earhart.
Well, we've got, Madam Chair, the elk killer.
The elk, too, yes.
Yes, I didn't know. I didn't answer.
Yes, well, Representative Owen actually did. Representative Marker, wasn't it the deer and the elk are getting infected? The deer and the elk. And then, of course, they're running around the whole state because they're not in a herd, and they're passing it all around. So we're going to have, a much bigger problem. Is that right, Representative Marker? Representative Earhart wants to know if the elk are part of this as well.
Yeah, well, I'm sure elk are being farmed, like cows or whatever.
That's right.
Not just on the roof.
Representative Lanning.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Just a point of clarification from your comment about the omnibus bill. Is it your intent that this is going to be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, or are you expecting this bill to travel separately?
I'll lay it over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. See what parts of it members could support.
Thank you for the clarification.
Thank you. Further testimony on House Bill 4103. If not, are there any questions? Otherwise, we'll see everyone tomorrow. We are adjourned. Oh, I'm sorry. Can I accept a motion from Representative Wolfwager for the minutes of March 31st, April 1st, and April 2nd?
Yes.
Okay. A discussion to those minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. The minutes are adopted. We are adjourned. Thank you.